Oh, Chris. Good. Oh, I know we have some people from Connecticut visiting, actually. Yeah. What you guys don't know is that yesterday morning, Chris set up an appointment with God, and they talked, and then Chris was like, God, if you could please have Michaela say yes. And on top of that, if you could make the weather like 65, 70 degrees. And then God was like, okay, because I thought you were going to ask me for like an Eagle Super Bowl, and I don't know. It's kind of stretching it, you know? Congratulations, Chris. So, continuing with our study on the book of Mark, we're going to be reading from chapter 1, verse 21. I got 3 points for you guys today. 3 points. The first point, Jesus is the authority. Second point, Jesus is the authority. And third point, Jesus is the authority. It took a while to come up with those. Mark 1, chapter 1, verse 21. It says, then they went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went to the synagogues and began to teach. The people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. Just then, a man in the synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit cried out, what do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Be quiet, Jesus said sternly. Come out of him. The impure spirit shook the man violently and came out of him with a shriek. The people were so amazed that they asked each other, what is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him. News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. So we're going to be reading through this text this morning from 21 to 28. And so in that first section from 21 to 23, you have Jesus in Capernaum, and then it's Sabbath day. What's kind of interesting about that is that during the Sabbath day, the regular speakers at the synagogue would essentially just take a day off, and they would have guest speakers coming up to do to teach and preach on the Old Testament scrolls. And Jesus took this opportunity. But what's crazy about that is that like he's preaching about himself. Like all of the Old Testament manuscripts of waiting for the Messiah, and then Jesus comes in. And now he's doing that lesson. I mean, there was a kind of a similar situation that Hannah and I actually experienced a couple of years back. We had to do some research for a class, and part of the requirements was to read this book, and I couldn't find this book anywhere. And then Googling stuff, I found out that this library next to our house that's part of a seminary had the book on there. I went in. And for 8 hours, Hannah and I sat in the library and, you know, read this book from cover to cover. And this guy walked up to me and said, hey, you know, hi, I've noticed you've been here for a while. Can I ask, what are you guys doing here? So we're talking. I close the book and I see his face on the back of the book. Like, he's the guy. He wrote it. And then he asked me what I thought about the book before I even realized that it was him. So I'm reading this guy's stuff. He's the guy. Now imagine Jesus preaching, like the Messiah is coming, and he's the Messiah. People were amazed, of course, but they're also amazed at the fact that he spoke with authority. Now this is significant because other teachers at this time would name drop and reference, hey, here's what my take from this passage, and it is similar to this high-respected other teachers, so you guys should take what I'm saying seriously. But Jesus is speaking essentially on his own behalf. Now, the Greek word here for authority is exousia, which essentially is more like power of choice, and it's the ultimate form of permission. Like, you can essentially do whatever you want with this kind of authority, and that's what they understood behind Jesus preaching. And when I think of being able to do whatever you want, so my dad has walked into a grocery store, filled his cart with groceries, and went to the cashier and said, "You know what? I've been shopping here for a while. I think you guys should give me this cart for free." And they let him take the cart. My dad gets upgrades for hotel rooms as a standard base of operations. Just, "Yeah, I know I paid for that, but you guys are going to give me an upgrade." He's also the only person I know that can go to a buffet with Tupperware. Just, you know, like, he, ultimate permission. Now, as amazing and incredible and I would never have enough bravery to do that as my dad is, it pales in comparison to the authority of Jesus, and this amazed the people that were there, but it also bothered a lot of them. Now, interesting, because the book of Mark is very, this happened, this happened, this happened, this happened, but like, if you could just kind of read between the lines here, Jesus is speaking with authority. Now, the Pharisees, and honestly, anyone who desired to have complete control over everything would be directly threatened by Jesus having authority. Now, if in general, a higher authority means that we're no longer in charge. And for I'm sure the Pharisees, I'm sure people that were listening to Jesus, but I think also a lot of us right here, right now, the idea of not being in charge is a reality that we want no parts of. It's like, you know, "Jesus, take the wheel, but then take that left." Yep, if you can just, you know? Or even like, "Jesus, I completely submit to you under these terms and conditions." I think it's the idea of anyone making decisions for us is scary, but if Jesus is the authority, then there does need to be a handing over of power here where Jesus is not conceptually behind the wheel, but controlling your life. I think what may work better, actually, than a car is probably a ship on the ocean, where if we have the helm, that's fine, but if God is the wind, if God is the power, and we're just going and following his direction, that probably works better than just, "Oh, you know, Jesus, take control of my life," but then we decide everything ourselves. I think we have to be moved by the powerful and sometimes unseen wind of God's influence. And I think part of the proof that we've got this idea of God's influence sometimes wrong is that I think we broke advice. Like if you could just bottle, I think we broke it, because it sounds a lot like permission, and I'm an adult, so you can't tell me what to do. So I'm going to go ahead and do what I think is best. And instead of seeking spiritual counsel, we look for loopholes. Or my favorite, when you present declaration but put an advice bow on it. Like, "Here's the decision I've made. Tell me what you think about it. I've made up my mind. I'm doing this. But I would like to hear your take on what I've already decided to do." Now, this is an issue of humility, of course. And humility then will be putting Jesus above ourselves and then putting other people above ourselves as well. Because seeking counsel is less about maximizing the success rate of the thing you're seeking counsel about and more about handing over authority to Jesus and trusting that the humility will be blessed. But it's something that has kind of become a lost art of let me not assume that I'm always correct, and let me kind of take the authority off of myself and get help in my life about the things that I'm going through. Because I know it's hard to think sometimes that we're not always correct. So to hear that, yeah, it takes a level of humility that I think is that we have to push through because it's going to be very uncomfortable for some, but it's required if we want to not be the ones in authority. So I'm going to talk to the dating couples. I'm going to talk to the women in dating couples right now. You know what the ultimate deal breaker should be? Is probably like, how much advice is this guy getting? Right? Like, how involved are people in this brother's life about decisions he's making? Because other things you can work on. Well, you know, if he's constantly wanting to go Dutch, and you can work on that. You know, like and with some sound advice that can be sorted out. Or if he's asking you exclusively on dates through text message, like we can work on those things. But if he's got a heart that says, I'm going to do whatever I want because I'm in charge here, because I'm the man and you're going to listen to me. The culture that's establishing is very scary and is just outright sinful. And if he's got a problem with that, tell him to come talk to me afterwards. I've got some scriptures for his opinions. Okay? If we don't establish a culture of getting advice constantly, we're establishing a culture of pride, which will carry into the relationships, which will carry into the marriages, will carry into the children, and then we're in a lot of trouble. So for the sake of the individual soul and for the future of the kingdom, please get advice. Please get advice. Where are we? Great. So they were amazed at his teaching. They were amazed at his authority. And then in verse 23, just then a man... Am I in the right place? No, I'm not. Okay, sorry. Before we get there. So it needs to be obvious in our life and our decisions that Jesus is in charge. In verse 23, because just then a man in the synagogue who was possessed by an impure spirit came out. What do you want with us, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Now, what's scarier than the housing of multiple demonic spirits is the outcome of someone's life who does not acknowledge and live by the authority of Jesus Christ. I'll say that again. What's scarier than the housing of multiple demonic spirits is the outcome of someone's life who does not acknowledge and live by the authority of Jesus Christ. In this situation, this is very scary. I mean, this is almost like on a Hollywood exorcist level scary, where this guy in the synagogue, the voice comes out and says, hey, what do you want with us? Leave us alone? That is so scary. But what happens here is interesting is what they say. Is that I know you are the Holy One. This is very early in Mark. This is very early in Jesus' ministry. I know you are the Holy One. You know, I will never beat the devil in a faith contest. Never. There's no amount of Bible study, no amount of prayer, no amount of church that I can attend that's going to get me to believe in God more than the devil does. I can't, because he's been there. He was there. He's made contact. So the difference has then got to be submitting to the authority, not just an intellectual understanding, not just that I really, really believe sincerely that God is who he says he is. Great. Well, so do the demons. So does this demon right here. Before the apostles knew, this demon is like, hey, you're the guy. You're the Holy One. The demons know. And then what? And then even more specifically, what they know outside of the fact that he's the Holy One is the statement is: Have you come to destroy us, to eradicate us, to remove any evidence that we ever existed? Jesus can destroy sin. Jesus can eradicate sin. Jesus can remove any evidence that sin was ever there. Jesus has authority over sin. Jesus has authority over addiction. Now, I'm currently, you know, doing some personal study on this, and I think there's still a lot that I have to learn, and there's of many people just that I know offhand that are way ahead of me in the study of this. But I think sometimes we overcomplicate repentance. Sometimes. Where if we were to just, and I'm saying just is there's a lot implied there. But if we were to do what Jesus says with a simple faith and simple obedience, as simple as they may sound, as that may sound, I think it gets us out of a lot of trouble. To just focus on the very, very simple, I need to be pure because Jesus is pure and Jesus wants me to live like him. Or I need to be outward focused because Jesus was outward focused and Jesus says I should live like him. I mean, it's trying to change without Jesus, it's just a waste of time. Like, I think I would go as far as saying, if you're not constantly reading and studying and meditating on the Word of God, and if you're not constantly praying and presenting your requests before God, you actually have no desire to get better. Because that's the power. There's classes, therapy, I'm sure that there's all these like supplemental stuff, but you want to change your soul, you got to go to Jesus, because he's got authority over sin. Authority over it. Now, in verse 25, the demon's response here is that they're repulsed by Jesus. They want no parts of him. They want to get, hey, please leave us alone. We don't want you here. But Jesus confronts sin head on, goes to it, attacks it. Now that presents a level of confidence that Jesus had, and a sign of strength that shows that they're not equal and opposite forces here. Like if we're boxing and I'm backing up, that's a sign of fear. But if I'm coming towards you, I think I can win this. Jesus, confident in his ability to eradicate sin, is pressing this the demon here. Now, I think what that tells me is that if I deliberately keep on sinning, I'm willingly backing away from the influence of God. I want no parts. You can stay right there. I'm good right here. Okay? I don't want the relationship. I don't want the influence. I don't want your authority over me. I'm gonna stay here in my sin. But because me and Jesus, because like I'm repulsed because of, like I'm repulsed by Jesus because of my sin, I'm gonna just keep backing up. And then we say, oh well, God, where are you? Right here. I just backed up, and now I don't know where God is, and why are all these bad things happening to me? Because I moved far away from God by my decision to deliberately stay in sin. And I think we have to remember that Jesus is more powerful than your worst sin. Than the thing that makes you the most guilty, nothing. Jesus is confident about his ability to eradicate that. You just got to go to him with the same confidence that he's coming to you. If I could get my hands on the cancer that is currently crippling my dad's body, if I could make that a person, if I could somehow like pull that out, oh my goodness, I'd want to destroy that thing. Oh my gosh. If there was a way that I could, if I could just like fight it physically, oh my goodness. Because it's killing my father. Sin is worse. Sin is worse. Cancer affects your body, which is sad and painful, and you know, I understand. But sin affects your eternity. So we can't be cutesy dancing around the topic. We need to eradicate the sin. We need to destroy the sin, no matter what it takes. And that the only way to make that happen is to confront it with the power of Jesus. Not any special, oh, here's my three-step plan for whatever. Bring this to Jesus and do what Jesus tells you to do. Because I think, you know, 2017, there's no one here that hasn't been affected either directly or indirectly by cancer. And if you look at sin as a cancer to the soul, we want that out of our bodies ASAP. We want that out of the bodies of our loved ones ASAP. And the way we do that is by bringing the problems to Jesus and having Jesus take care of that for us. I have never in my life sought after sin and failed. Never. If I make up my mind that I want to be lazy, I'm going to be lazy. If I make up my mind that I want to be impure, I'm going to be impure. If I make up my mind that, you know, I have this, I know this is slander, but I want to talk about it, I'm going to find someone to talk about. And if I can succeed 100% of the time when I decide to be unrighteous, imagine what I could do if I decided to live righteously with the same confidence. And that's not theoretical. That's because Jesus is more powerful than sin. Jesus is more powerful than these personal demons that we have. We just have to have confidence in that. Because we've done the opposite. We've sought after bad things and accomplished it. But just change the habit here and seek after Jesus and his righteousness, and he will win. It's impossible for him to lose. Verse 27, let me start to wrap up. The people were also amazed that they asked each other, "What is this? A new teaching and with authority. He even gives orders to impure spirits and they obey him." News about him spread quickly over the whole region of Galilee. Sophomore year of college, I took, you know, one of those classes you don't have to take, but you have to take. I took a science of natural disasters class. Yep. It was a lecture hall that it probably held about like 175 people. And first day of class, it was packed. Gave out the syllabus, gave out the expectations. Second day of class, there was like 20 people there. Now, I don't know, just out of principle, I've never dropped the class. I just, not for any like academic integrity, I just didn't. So I kept the class, and the professor was an interesting guy. Obviously a genius. He understood the way the world worked from like a scientific level. And he kept bringing up this personal study he was doing about the trends that he'd seen in weather patterns in Queens. And then one day he came to class kind of visibly frazzled and said, "Hey, I've been doing some research and I think we're going to get a hurricane in Queens. I think it's going to do a lot of damage, and based like the pressure systems and the temperature here, and just kind of, I think this is building up to actually be something to be very, very concerned about." And because in general we just kind of thought he was kind of loopy, we're like, "Oh, that's nice, but you know, please get to the class." Sure enough, the day that he said it would happen, we saw a hurricane in Queens. And it did a lot of damage to the Queens. People died. Like, this was, I don't know if they have them here, but in New York they have these like very, very heavy metal garbage cans that are like on the red lights, that they make them that heavy so they can't be stolen. Like, these things can't be moved. Those were bouncing all over the place because of the winds. It was a mess. The week after, his class was packed. No, and like more than the original class. Other professors came. Students that weren't enrolled in the class came. There was standing room only. Like, it was not an empty seat. That lasted about 2 weeks. And it went right back down to that original 20 after the first group left. Now, Capernaum where Jesus is right now is essentially where he made his Galilean home base. This is actually where, Peter's hometown. Jesus lived here for a little bit. This was Jesus' like base of operations. He lived in Capernaum. Imagine that. Imagine living in the same place as Jesus. You would hope that these guys got it. Let's look at Luke 10. Luke 10, we'll start in verse 13. Luke 10, 13 says, "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethesda! For if the miracles that are performed in you had been performed in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago, sitting in sackcloth and ashes. But it'll be more bearable for Tyre and Sidon in the judgment than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be lifted to the heavens? No, you will go down to Hades." That's the same city that Jesus did this miracle in. That's the same group that were amazed by his teaching and by his authority over demons. They were inspired. They were convicted. They were moved temporarily for a moment. I like to believe that Jesus lives here. I do. But if my life doesn't show that I am living under Christ's authority, if I'm not handing my decisions and my personal righteousness over to Jesus, then I risk being able to live amongst Christ and miss out on heaven. Church, and the authority and Lord, seriously, if we don't take the call of discipleship and the authority and lordship of Christ in our lives seriously, we may risk having the same fate as Capernaum. In being there, seeing the miracles, seeing God working, being amazed, being inspired, convicted, motivated on Sundays from 11 o'clock to like 11:45, and then I got to go to work. I got to go to class. I got to do this thing that separates me from the call of discipleship. And that's scary, but Jesus being in control is the only way to succeed. And you have access to that. We all have access to that. We just have to let go and do what Jesus says. One of the campus guys made me this shirt. Friend says, "Read the Bible," and the back says, "Do what it says." And it was kind of a joke, I think, that he was making fun of me for saying that a lot. But simple faith is extremely powerful. It is extremely powerful. Handing over authority to Christ and just, okay, God, I know that I may have a different take on this, but I'm going to trust that you understand me better, and I'm going to do what you tell me to do. That faith, that's life-changing. That's eternity-changing. And Jesus has the authority to make that call. We just have to submit to that authority. Church, let's not be like Capernaum. Let's not waste the conviction and the motivation and the inspiration that we get from getting to hear God's word. Let's change. Let's hand over our lives to Christ and live change lives, because Jesus is the authority. And Jesus is the authority. And Jesus is the authority. Amen. Thanks.
All right. Let's stand and sing together. Mine eyes have seen the glory.